I think for TVL to pick up again, the rate environment has to change. And when that happens, then I think more innovative products within the DeFi sector can take place. And then we can really see products becoming composable and really just leveraging on that particular proposition of DeFi.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Nick Dracon. I am here with a very special guest, TN, who is a co-founder and the CEO of Pendle Finance. Good morning to you, sir. Good afternoon. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for the conversation. We've been doing some work with your team and at Revelo Intel. We've got a snapshots product that we release every 30 days. So I'm intimately aware of the numbers as it relates to Pendle. You've had a fantastic year. It's a bear market. Most projects are fighting for survival or closing down, whereas Pendle Finance seems to be getting stronger and stronger. I wanted to just give you the opportunity first to give us, in your own words, a very brief overview for those that aren't aware of, in a nutshell, the value proposition that Pendle brings into the market. It is somewhat innovative. We hadn't seen too much of what Pendle does before you hit the market. So give us a brief overview and go from there.
So Pendle is a protocol for the tokenization and the trading of DeFi yields. And among the use cases that Pendle can enable, first and foremost is the fixed rates. So the whole idea of Pendle came about actually because of an interest in fixed income products. So how it's enabled on Pendle is through the splitting of a yield-bearing asset into a principal token and yield token. So that PT is generally the fixed rate component. And then for the other side, the yield token, that's where the yield from the underlying protocol accrues to. And that is where like traders and speculators can express a view on a certain APY position. So this is another use case that Pendle can enable.
Yeah, so effectively splitting up the principal and the yield that that principal would earn into two separate assets that you can trade independently, which opens up a for lack of a better phrase, a Pandora's box of opportunity where market participants can find an edge and it's kind of now there's a game within the game. So, as a trader myself, when Pendle launched, I was very intrigued because it simply gives you another way to, another opportunity set to potentially find interesting ways to express a view. Now, just on a personal level, I'm sure you've talked about your background previously in other podcasts, so we don't need to repeat it here again. But what I haven't heard asked before, and what I'm curious about is, you were there at the beginning. You're one of the co-founders. You kind of architected the concept, the construct of what this protocol should do and how it should do it. You've had tremendous success over the last 6 to 12 months. Is what you envisioned Pendle being at the beginning, how has that changed over time? I mean, at the end of the day, these protocols are businesses and they need to evolve and they need to pivot. You had an idea of what you wanted it to be. You're now at a situation where you've got $140 million, $150 million of TVL, widely successful. Has anything changed along that journey, just from a personal standpoint and from a technical and product standpoint?
Yes, I would say at the high level, the vision has remained very consistent from the very first day, but the implementation has certainly changed. So I'll just elaborate a bit more on that front. The idea of Pendle came about during DeFi summer when my co-founders and I, we were farming the food coins and really enjoying the sweet APYs ranging from 10 to 20,000% or more. And it also occurred to us when we were farming all these food coins that there was no way for us to lock in the yield. And I mean, for us, we knew that the APYs were fleeting, but we couldn't do anything about it. And that was, I think, the first inspiration for us. And when we compared the situation back then, DeFi to TradFi, it also occurred to us that fixed income products are probably one of the most important verticals within a matured financial sector, but it was largely absent in crypto. So, I mean, we became a lot more convicted about that direction, and we started to think about solutions that could enable the fixed yield that we were looking for. So I think there were two design principles that we eventually complied with, and they're still very consistent to our design today. Firstly, when we started out with Pendle, I mean, or at least when we were thinking about the design of Pendle, we had wanted to be more complementary to the existing protocols versus fighting for liquidity against the big protocols. Because this was probably in late 2020, and Aave Compound, they were collectively sitting on maybe $20 billion worth of TVL. So there was no way that we could fight for liquidity against these big protocols. So, and instead, what would make more sense was to build on top of Aave and Compound. And that is why Pendle's implementation involves the taking in of yield-bearing assets from all these DeFi protocols and then splitting the yield-bearing assets into PT and YT and allow these two parts to be traded independently. So our first implementation involved AUSDC from Aave and CDAI from Compound. But that's one aspect. The other aspect was the use of AMM. So when we were thinking about a product, it was largely around, I mean, the price discovery, because this is a relatively new sort of asset. It's got time component. So that means it's not that suitable to be traded on a conventional AMM like Uniswap. And it, because of the time component, there needs to be a different form of design. So, and it's a choice between AMM or order book and an order book, right? So, I mean, eventually we settled with AMM because we thought that when it comes to the pricing of yield token, I didn't think that anyone had an idea how to price the yield token. So if we were to rely on an order book, we think that the liquidity might not be good, and it might not be very conducive for the trading experience, because everyone would have a very different pricing model. Instead, we thought having an AMM to facilitate the price discovery and the transfer of ownership of these assets would make more sense. Like, let's say if I'm a trader and I want to buy YT, I shouldn't have to think too much about how to price these things. Instead, I can just rely on a math formula to help me with the price discovery. So that these two effectively guided our entire design. And when we launched Pendle V1 in June 2021, it wasn't very successful. It was a very complex product. And because there were so many terminologies that were native to the protocol, the learning curve for the community was very steep. And not just that, because yield trading was such a new concept in a very, very crowded and active market in 2021, everyone was just paying attention to other protocols that were able to offer higher APY. So it took us a while to get to see some traction. But even then, I think the user experience for Pendle users weren't the best. So for a good part of last year, we actually spent the time to revamp the underlying mechanics and launch Pendle V2 at the end of last year. But just very quickly, I think some of the changes that I can share with regards to Pendle V2, firstly, it's the AMM layer. So previously, we had to separate different liquidity pools between YT and PT, right? So PT has one pool, YT has another pool, and they don't interact. With Pendle V2, we were able to use another implementation that combines the liquidity for PT and YT into a single pool. And such that whether you're a user trading PT or YT, it will be traded against the same pool. So it's more capital efficient. And then for liquidity providers, the liquidity actually works harder and generates more yield for users. And it's a better user experience as well. Because if I'm a trader, I don't have to go to different pools and different interfaces. I can just trade against the same pool and achieve the same kind of result. And then secondly, we were also very cognizant of the fact that when liquidity providers provide or deposit asset into a pool, impermanent loss is a very big consideration. So with the Pendle AMM, the V2 AMM, we've actually reduced impermanent loss quite drastically by pairing the two assets that are highly correlated in the same pool. So an example would be And a very, very crude example would be USDC and USDT. They are very highly correlated, and that's why the impermanent loss is negligible between these two assets. Now, in the same way, we take a similar kind of approach with the pool design, PT against its own underlying. One is a derivative of the other, and the high correlation basically negates or minimalizes the impermanent loss in the pool. So these are just some changes that we've done with Pendle V2. And I think to a large extent, we're very pleased to see that it's been received quite well by the market.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when V1 launched, wrong product at the wrong time. You know, I mean, there was just so much going on at the time, insane opportunities available all over the place. Yeah. We all knew they weren't sustainable, but you still chase them because you want access to that activity while it's available. But
yeah,
now we're in a situation where, you know, the market is drastically different. Yields are drastically different. And people, you know, for lack of a better kind of way of explaining it, have become somewhat more sophisticated in how they think about the yields that are on offer and how they should access them. So, you know, I think it's certainly a very useful product. And as I said earlier, it opens up a world of opportunities in terms of what you could possibly do. So we talked about, you know, your original vision and making these two very distinct decisions about, you know, symbiotic relationships with existing protocols versus a combative relationship. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And then the decision to have an AMM instead of an order book. Now that you've gone down this path and you have those learnings, and as I said a number of times, a moderate amount of success, and we'll talk about a variety of different examples, but as it relates to some immediate improvements that you guys are working on or thinking about off camera, you know, you flagged the improvement of, you know, the trading experience, the UI, the functionality that a trader has at their disposal. And you mentioned some of the improvements that you're looking at doing. Do you want to start with limit orders and why you think that's an important improvement and feature set that should that you guys are working on?
Yeah, sure. Among the items that we are focusing for the rest of the year, we are looking to introduce a couple more features. And then one of them is, I think the theme of the features that we're looking to launch revolve largely around user experience, trading experience. So basically the web app interaction. One of the things that we've learned from interacting with our users is basically the bottleneck that they've encountered when they were trading YTs specifically. So YT being the yield token and the more capital efficient component, it can represent a much bigger notional value of underlying. So for example, a $10,000 worth of YT could represent probably like 100 or 200 grand of the underlying in value. So because of that, a small amount of YT trade can actually inflict much more outsized impact on the pool because of the implied leverage. So as an example, if a user is trading maybe $50,000 worth of YT, it could represent a couple of $100,000 worth of the underlying in value. And that small trade because of the implied leverage that it represents, it could result in a pretty significant price impact, probably ranging from 2 to 5%. Now, so if a trader has a big position and is interested in buying YT in certain amount, let's say 50K or 100K, the trader would have to expect like 2 to 5% price impact. And that is not the best trading experience. So taking this particular experience in mind, one of the things that we're introducing in the coming months would be something like an RFQ system. So we think in this particular case, for certain pools that are able to, that have seen healthy traction and have seen the interest, like a bigger demand for YT trades, having an RFQ system for traders to indicate that size and also the price for the yield tokens could help alleviate some of the inconveniences that's caused by the AMM currently. that should improve the trading experience, because now with limit order in place, I think there's a benefit to the demand of the trader. We expect this feature to help improve the overall trading experience, and as a result of that, can facilitate bigger trade sizes over a longer period of time.
Yeah. So a natural flow on from that is some analysis that you've done internally, and also from conversations that you've had around, you know, the institutional nature of this product and the institutional adoption that you've seen. I've got a couple of stats here for you from the August Pendle snapshot that we're about to release in a couple of days. The first one is that since the 1st of July, so for a 2-month period, we track the yield, you know, the yield sector as a category, includes Convex, Aura, a number of different protocols that do something similar. And Pendle is part of that category. And we track TVL dominance of this bucket of protocols, and we try and work out who is gaining traction and who is losing traction. Pendle's gone from a 2.5% TVL dominance, and again, this is just TVL, but you know, it's suitable for this discussion, from 2.5% to 4% over the last 8 weeks. So that's the first statistic. The second statistic is that in August, trading volume has gone from 30 million in July to 35 million in August. So both of those numbers show us that, and by the way, over that period, the actual TVL numbers, right, gross TVL numbers, have not really moved. It was around 130 million early July, and it's around 135 million today. But trading's increased significantly, you know, 17 or 18%. And your share of the category has increased, you know, about 170%. Now, you've spoken about potentially what I think is a focus on institutional adoption. What are you seeing internally in terms of the breakdown of TVL and activity on Pendle Finance as it relates to retail and institutional that's led you to kind of deploy resources in trying to attract these larger trades?
Yeah, I want to just address the numbers first, because I think they're actually pretty interesting from our perspective. I was looking at the number yesterday while the TVL denominated in dollar value hasn't grown. In fact, in July, we peaked at around $155 billion in TVL versus the 137 approximately as of today. There is a decline. But when we look at it in Ether term, it was around 79,000 Ether back in July compared to 84,000 Ether as of yesterday. So there's actually about 5,000 Ether increase in TVL over the same period. And I think because of the depreciation of ETH price from 1900 in July to the low 1600, high 1500 as of today, the overall TVL, when denominated in dollar value, has come down. Now, but of course, I think what changed along the way, a couple of things happened in between July and August. We have definitely placed greater emphasis in education. In fact, like one of the things that we feel very strongly about internally is to continue the investment in educational efforts and the distribution of these educational materials to various grassroots communities. So for now, we have a couple of resources that users could refer to, but we are looking to revamp that and consolidate that into a single portal. Currently, the web app has a learn category, and then docs is another resource. And then we have blog posts and many other threads. Yeah, moving forward, we're going to consolidate everything so that it's easier for users to just be directed or pointed to a single resource to learn about Pendle. So we are currently in the progress of doing that. And with some of the, like in August, we've actually pushed out some of the content already. So content around trading strategies and like yield trading. So the basic high level ideas of how users can very easily duplicate a strategy that has already proven to be quite successful on chain and execute them with relative ease. So these are the content that we've pushed out. And then beyond that, we've also tap onto the networks of some thought leaders and key opinion leaders in the space to help to help convey the message of yield trading and propositions of Pendle to their respective communities. So for one, I think I can attribute the growth in both trading volume and TVL to the educational efforts that we've invested in. And then secondly, it's with regards to the asset categories that we focus on. So as of now, Pendle has three different asset categories that we are mostly focused on. First is naturally LSD. So STETH, RETH, and a whole string of other ETH LSDs have elevated Pendle and given Pendle the traction that we see today. We got very lucky in the first half of the year to be able to ride on the wave. And then now we've become one of the more major venues to deposit STETH or trade STETH yield. Second category is actually the PERP protocol. So GMX, GLP tokens, and then GDAI from Gains Network. These two assets have also proven to be some of the most traded pools on Pendle. And specifically, I think GMX is the largest pool with a little more than $20 million in TVL at its peak. And then it gets very, very active Monday, Tuesday, every week, because rate of GLP refreshes on Tuesday. And then it is a good time for traders to express a view on the GLP APY, whether it's to long it or short it. Now, the third category is actually pretty new and quite recent. We have only added SDAI pool and FUSDC pool from Flux 2 weeks ago. And in the first week of launch, the two pools were able to aggregate approximately $16 million in TVL collectively. And I think there's a lot of appetite and interest in real-world asset tokens. And we think it will be one of the more significant growth drivers moving forward within the DeFi sector. So from our side, this is a very, very preliminary implementation for us. And we think there's a lot of potential in this particular category and we want to be involved in it. And we think that Pendle could be a very, very good instrument for traders or like participants of real world assets to express a view. So now we are starting with SDAI pools and Flux. And we're also we're taking a very cautious approach in working with some of these assets, just given that they can be relatively sensitive in nature because they are securities. So at the moment, we're only interfacing with the intermediaries that are operating in the DeFi sector. But we'll see how it goes and then gradually be more involved in the RWA sector. Now, on the study of the pools that we've conducted, as of now, because we have made it an opt-in for the participants of Pendle to provide their contact details, we've actually attempted to reach out to these individuals and teams and then establish connections with them through the contact details that they've provided. And from these different connections that we've made, we can be sure that at least 20% of the TVL that has been tagged on Pendle can be attributed to the institutions. But I personally think that there are a lot of institutions who have yet to identify themselves with us, but they probably constitute a bigger portion of the TVL on Pendle. And case in point, I think the bigger pools, the more active pools like STETH, GLP, and even the more recent pools like SDAI and FUSDC, the institutions are the big liquidity providers in these respective pools, and they have yet to identify themselves. So, I mean, I can only speculate that they have much greater involvement than what we can confirm at this moment.
Yeah, I'd certainly agree with that. You know, if you have a confirmed number of 20%, you probably double it and you're probably within the ballpark of what the real number could be. What's interesting to me about Pendle and something I don't see very often, you know, in any business, like most businesses that can play both the B2C game and the B2B game, make a mistake trying to play both games because they can potentially play both games. And I always see success kind of flow to the companies that pick one and do it very, very well. It's really hard to be great at B2C and great at B2B for obvious reasons. The messaging is different. The mechanics are different. The relationships are different. The sales cycle, it's all different. Two different businesses. But what Pendle's managed to do, and it's probably a testament to your team, you are playing both those games successfully. You know, you just spent a few minutes talking to us about the investment that you have in education. That is not targeted to B2B institutional customers. That is targeted to retail users that may not understand as yet the value prop of the protocol. So the fact that you've been able to play both of those games and have success so far in both of those categories is extremely bullish for the future prospects of the protocol, just because the market is so much bigger. You have multiple ways to win, and it's very difficult to pull off. So kudos to actually getting this far, trying to have that dual prong strategy. When it pays off greatly. And again, you're investing in both of those concurrently. You know, you're talking about on the tech front, a focus on getting these limit orders up to speed. That's an institutional type of improvement. So I find that interesting. I see a lot of DeFi protocols trying to do both. They fail miserably. Small teams, inexperienced teams, you can't do it all. But so far, so good on your end. I want to unpack, you know, you touched on a couple of different things there in your reaction to the numbers that I presented you with that I've been looking at. And one is on, you know, your focus on these three very distinct categories of assets as it relates specifically to real world assets. You know, we've got T-bills, we've got these financial, you know, securities. Everyone understands what they are. They're very easy to kind of absorb, and that is currently offered. But there is a litany of other reward assets that are gaining traction, you know, whether it's real estate, whether it's trading insurance premiums, whether it's, you know, there are a number of different kind of deployments that have been happening. Does Pendle have a view on, you know, expansion as it relates to those different verticals? Huge, huge market. Each comes with their own risks and their own diligence. Do you want to fight that battle at this stage, or are you just looking to focus on T-bills and the financial assets, since that is something that you've already got some experience in? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah, at this moment, we're most comfortable in just sticking with very, very vanilla assets like T-bills. I do agree that there's a lot of potential beyond this asset category, like what you mentioned, insurance and many other forms of very sustainable yield. But truthfully, that's quite beyond our scope. I think we will only focus on, because real world asset is still a relatively, not that it's new, but we're only starting to see like the T-bill tokenization taking shape within the DeFi sector. So we will see how this play out. And then if it gets sufficiently mature, then we will look at how we can expand to the other types of assets and then enable more trading strategies for these different asset types. Yeah, I have something that I'd like to add, because I think you brought up the point about retail and an institution. I appreciate that point. I think we are definitely like trying to target these two sites, because Pendle has the PT and YT component. And over a long period of time, right, I think it only makes sense to have these two different types of users to participate in Pendle. Like, for example, one of the more recent initiatives that we launched was Pendle Earn. Pendle Earn is fundamentally an on-chain fixed deposit product. We have designed it such that it is very simple to use, because it abstracts away all the complexities that come with derivatives. And we have made it such that it should appeal to most DeFi users. So basically, you deposit like say $1, and there's a fixed APY of say 5%. And at the end of the duration, you can withdraw your principal along with the fixed yield that's promised when you enter a position. So this is how we intend to target the retail users. And how we see this product scale is by integrating with other venues like centralized exchanges and also wallets, like browser wallets and mobile wallets. Now, because of the inverse relationship between PT and the yield token YT, right? When we create demand for PT through all these different integrations, it will also create opportunities for YT. Again, when the demand for PT increases, the price of PT would go up. And at the same time, the price of YT would come down. And when the price of YT comes down, that could become an interesting opportunity for yield traders or speculators to scoop up the cheap YT and ride on the cheap YT to potentially benefit the difference between the published APY from the underlying protocol and the implied yield that is published on Pendle. So this is how we see the two parts play. So I think it only makes sense for us to target these two because they are very essential to the entire being of Pendle.
Yeah, Pendle is certainly a very easy to use interface. It may be interesting in the future if Pendle ends up having two interfaces, one for institutional customers and the other one for everybody else, just because
perhaps
institutional customers may require, or they do require, you know, a different level of tooling. That's probably premature at this stage. But, you know, as you were talking, I thought of something that, you know, I want to ask you just from on a personal level, how you think about it. It doesn't need to be the Pendle Finance kind of view because it does affect all of DeFi. But if we just zoom out, right? Pendle Earn, it's a very simple to understand, simple to use product, fixed yield, number of different assets. You know, scanning the yields that are available now is anywhere from 3 to 4.8, 4.95%, depending on the chain. And, you know, you're currently live on Ethereum, Arbitrum, Optimism, and the BNB chain. But let's say that the yields on average are somewhere between 3 and 5%. We live in a world right now where with a couple of clicks of a button, you know, most retail and institutional financial market participants, you know, whether you're on the Revolut app or Robinhood or whatever it is, you can get 5, 5.5% just in a market money market fund. Just kind of take off your Pendle CEO hat for a minute. And what's your personal view about, you know, the effect that has on DeFi currently in terms of a ceiling for TVL, a ceiling for adoption, and what needs to change to kind of move that forward? Because it is a force that is very difficult to overcome when you have option A giving you a better yield with more security, no smart contract. It's just better right now. How do you think about that personally?
Yeah, I think right now the state of DeFi is definitely still very influenced by the general macro environment. If the rate environment stays the way it is or even continues to hike, then I think it would be less appealing. The general APYs across DeFi would be less appealing for most people. And then we probably would expect more liquidity outflow or status quo. I think for TVL to pick up again, the rate environment has to change. And when that happens, then I think more innovative products within the DeFi sector can take place. And then we can really see products becoming composable and really just leveraging on that particular proposition of DeFi to construct structured products that offer much higher yield than off-chain products. And that's when we can probably see more liquidity inflow back to the space.
Revelo Intel is a research platform that produces institutional level research in a way that is accessible to individual users. We currently publish 4 different research products aimed at helping you generate ideas, do deep dive research into those ideas, and stay up to date with both the data and the narratives at any given time. To tie it all off, we have a private members-only Discord where some of the sharpest minds in DeFi, as well as our team of analysts, actively discuss ideas in real time. Click the link in the description of this video to create a free account. Yeah, I think it, you know, the regulatory headwinds are well documented and significant. That will work itself out. But I agree with you that, you know, in a world where you can just get 5, 5.5% in a federally insured bank account, it's a significant ceiling. For me, that is the largest headwind that faces the industry at this point. It doesn't last forever. As an investor, it's a good world to be in. It just means that I have a lot more options. And what happens is, you know, the attractiveness of other asset classes in this rate environment improves, right? Whether you're, you know, real estate falls, like there is dynamics at play. What's been interesting to me, and this is just a personal observation, is that the opposites kind of happened in DeFi. And that's not to say that things have gotten worse. It's probably because, you know, not so long ago, things were so awesome in DeFi. There were these, you know, it wasn't even outsized returns. It was, you know, off the planet kind of returns where things got so out of hand that it's very difficult to envision a situation where we enter that world again. And because we've got this recency bias, you know, now we look at a yield of 5% or 6% or 10% or 15% on a stablecoin, and it doesn't seem that attractive. I just think we were spoiled for 24 months of absolute awesomeness. And that needs to be worked through the system. Yeah. But, you know, I certainly think that, you know, rates come down eventually. I think probably at some point in 2024, certainly not in the first half, but, you know, we don't need to discuss our macro views here. But I do appreciate your personal viewpoint on that, you know, especially in the context of the reasonable and sensible and sustainable products that Pendle is trying to put forward. It's not fancy. It's not glossy, right? It's not very sexy. And the fact that you've been able to, you know, attract so much TVL and maintain it while continuing to invest in a variety of different initiatives is certainly impressive. Let's move on slightly to on the reward asset front. I personally have been somewhat surprised at the growth of on-chain T-bill activity. I thought it would have grown a lot faster. I thought, you know, the TVL would be in the hundreds of millions, not a couple hundred million, which is what it is. I think Under Finance is the biggest at 150 million. It was posed to me that the main reason, for, you know, just my friends in the hedge fund game, that the main reason for that is the ambiguity around some of the providers and the lack of reporting requirements of some of the providers, and that just the level of trust in participating in that world right now. You talk to these institutions all day and you know, a variety of market participants. A, did you think that it would move faster than what it has? And B, if that's the case, why do you think that is, and what needs to improve or be iterated on so that more significant capital can participate in these on-chain T-bill activities?
I think for now, there is a bottleneck in the TVL side because of just considerations from a participant, right? Right now, if I'm a regular citizen, I can access T-bill off-chain relatively easily without having to worry too much about the smart contract risk or getting hacked. And certainly, like, it, from a user experience standpoint, it's much more seamless, at least if I were to do it directly through a bank or through the regulator. So I think that is one aspect, because like, I just think that for most people, even if there is additional token rewards that's issued by the T-bill token issuer on-chain, it might not necessarily warrant the steps needed to cross that on-off ramp hurdle to just get onto the other side. Now, what I think it would be interesting is when there is sufficient amount of TVL for all these T-bill tokens and their respective derivatives to take place on-chain, I think people who are smart enough or protocols that are capable will start to really capitalize on these liquidity and create strategies, package it into some form of products that can offer higher yield to users. And then at that point in time, like for example, T-bill tokens natively probably only offers, let's say, 5%. But these T-bill tokens, when combined with some other strategies, like say options or even something like Pendle, the return could probably double and triple. Then the increase in APY, because of composability, would make it more appealing for more liquidity to flow through. So I think right now it is slowly trickling in because there's still a lot of people sitting on the sideline because the innate APY for these assets don't justify the crossing of the hurdle from off-chain to on-chain protocols. But my view is, with time, we will see protocols becoming smarter and like individuals coming up with like creative means to make the product more attractive. And then that would probably draw in more liquidity.
Yeah, if you're looking to underwrite the risk associated with option A versus option B, you need to be compensated for the extra risk you're taking. So some kind of, I like the way you phrased it, you know, repackaging of that yield to be able to increase the APY so that everyone can be compensated for the risk they're taking. Haven't seen that yet, but it's very early days. Like when I say I'm disappointed in the growth, it's, you know, it didn't go boom. And it makes sense why it didn't go boom.
It's growing. It's just slower. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, on DeFi Llama, they've got a category for RWA. And it was $1 billion maybe 4 to 5 weeks ago. It's $1.3 billion today. So in aggregate, it's growing very, very quickly. But naturally, that's not just T-bill growth. That includes a number of other things. So I'm actually really excited for what happens over the next 6 to 12 months on the real-world asset side, even above and beyond, you know, vanilla financial assets. It's just interesting to me because I understand, you know, a lot of those asset classes very well, whether it's real estate or whether it's, you know, startups or private investing or anything like that. But it's very cumbersome to transact in those arenas for me, and I do it for a living. So being able to open up those asset classes to everyone else who doesn't have access to them or can't meet that ticket size for a private investment or anything like that, it just from a kind of not just a philosophical standpoint, but also a practical standpoint, very, very exciting. And just again, another opportunity set to be able to find an edge. So I'm tracking that very carefully and look forward to seeing what comes up next. Now, you know, you've got FUSDC on Pendle. You've prepared a very, you know, high level, simple strategy. If you could just run through it and you know, give viewers the opportunity to kind of follow your train of thought as to a very practical use case for the utility that Pendle offers. And then users can extrapolate from there and layer, you know, strategies on top of that. But let's just kind of set the stage in terms of, here's something that you could do today with looping a particular asset and the returns that are available. So I'll just make you the host.
This is it's a very simple strategy that involves the continuous looping to lever up the fixed rate exposure. So this strategy here is, it involves PPGLP, and it involves another money market in the form of Dolomite. So Dolomite is by now the only money market that recognizes PTGLP as collateral. So fundamentally, right, because PT is structured like a zero coupon bond, PT itself innately has a fixed yield component. So for now, I think at the point of, like, as of today, PT probably has 7% fixed yield. So that means if just looking at PT and looping PT, if we loop it enough times, that 7% yield can actually increase multiple folds. Yeah, so it basically involves the deposit of PTGLP into Dolomite and in turn borrow a composition of 25% USDC, 30% BTC and 45% ETH to buy more PTGLP. And then assuming 4 times looping, right? This will likely result in 23% APY fixed yield. So this is, I think in general, a pretty attractive strategy that has relatively low risk. Yeah.
And the 23%, that's not a variable yield, right? That is locked
it's
in.
It's not. Yes.
Right. Doesn't matter what happens to interest rates on Dolomite or anything like that. This is a fixed rate product. Because I mean, we're all familiar with looping. You know, we've been doing it for a number of years. And, you know, the thing that you needed to keep an eye on is what's happening with rates, because it could be profitable today and not profitable in an hour. This allows you to kind of participate, set and forget, and without any, correct me if I'm wrong, right? There's no liquidation component here. There is no volatility in the prices. This is, you're kind of just, you're buying this 23% return.
Correct.
Yeah. So that construct is somewhat different than what most people are used to when they're playing around with DeFi, in that everything's a moving target and you need to constantly stay ahead of it. You could get, there could be some crazy wick that liquidates you or whatever. This is not it. This lets you earn a very stable return for a moderate amount of risk. Are you taking any smart contract risk on the Dolomite side, or is it just on the Pendle side?
It's potential. I mean, like, they're, because these two are separate protocols, so there will be smart contract risk on both ends. So I just want to add on, it is because like this strategy involves the PTGLP as collateral to borrow these respective assets in the various composition. So the reason why 25% USDC, 30% BTC, and 45% ETH is because these are the makeup of a GLP token. So with this three assets, the user can go back and buy GLP and then loop the PTGLP back into the same strategy. So as long as the looping is kept to, let's say, below 5x, this is a relatively safe strategy because of the correlation between the borrowing and the lending side.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry about my question around the smart contract risk. For some reason, I thought that this was a packaged together interaction where everything happened in the background. That's not the case. You need to buy PTGLP. Then you need to go and deposit it into Dolomite. You need to then borrow some tokens in the denominations outlined on the screen. And then you would physically need to go in and buy more PTGLP and then loop it yourself. It's not like the one-click looping that you can get on Radiant, for example.
Yes. So this is still relatively manual, but I think like this can also be very easily, like with enough demand for this product, it can very easily be automated into a smart contract. And we can, with that, then it would be a lot easier for users to participate in a strategy like this.
Yeah, so, you know, users can just extrapolate from this and you know, there's a number of different strategies one can deploy. At Revelo Intel, we're probably going to do what we call a strategy guide on Pendle specifically and maybe outline half a dozen different ways that you can get creative with varying risk profiles and get creative with what's available to express a particular view or to enhance some yield that you're, you know, the yield on a situation you already are happy to be exposed in. So I think that'll be really helpful. We'll probably get that out in the next couple of weeks. So, okay. So thanks for that, TN. We live in a world, a DeFi world, where it is a very natural evolution of things for protocols to look for opportunities on multiple chains for a variety of reasons. Diversification is one, you know, providing more opportunities to users is another, accessing grants and funding from new chains. So there are a number of reasons why it makes perfect sense to embark on those journeys. Currently, Pendle is live on Mainnet, Arbitrum, BNB, and Optimism. So four chains, significant chains. And if you just want to talk to us about internally how you think about your cross-chain strategy, your multi-chain strategy, or whatever terminology we want to use, are you looking at deploying different product strategies on different chains based on what is happening on that native chain? You know, you mentioned previously the three main product categories that you want to focus on being LSDs, real world assets, and I forget the third one that you picked out.
Per protocols.
So talk to me a little bit about how you think about how you approach each of these chains, and maybe there's some information you can give us about some other chains that you're potentially looking at.
Yeah, sure. So in terms of the chain exposure, the way we're looking at it is very consistent with how we're focusing on the different asset categories. So like you said, there are three asset categories that we're focusing on: LSDs, PERP protocols, and RWA. Now, our take is generally, when we look at the chain, we started off with ETH, but gradually we would be looking at, when we were evaluating other chains and ecosystems to expand to, there are mostly two layers of evaluation. First one is primitives, the existence of primitives, because Pendle is a second order derivative. And actually, there is no need for us to be a first mover in any chain, because if the underlying primitive is not established, then there's actually no reason for a protocol like Pendle to exist. So what we have to ensure when we expand is the existence of all these primitives like AMMs, money markets, and then oracles and vaults. And then beyond that, it's really the TVL, because with all the different products and DeFi values, even if we are tokenizing the yield of, let's say, the largest protocol with, say, $1 billion in TVL, the most optimistic case for us as of now is maybe only 10% of that gets deposited into Pendle as TVL. So it really is a matter of size, right? If the overall TVL in the ecosystem is only $10 million, and if we're able to convert 10% of that, we are looking at $1 million in TVL. So that might not make too much sense for us to focus on versus another ecosystem with 1 billion or 10 billion in total TVL. So this is, I guess, like the two layers of evaluation for us when we are thinking about the expansion. And as of now, we're still very consistent with the three different categories, asset categories that we focus on across all the chains that we have presence on. The next one for us is going to be Mantle. So we think there's a lot of potential over there. And from what we know about their focus, they will prioritize LSD and real world assets. So we're excited to see how things build up and when they're sufficiently ready. When Lido deploys RepSD ETH on Mantle, then I think it would be good time for us to also have an implementation there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just to give people some context, as it stands today, roughly about 80 million of TVL is on mainnet, about 45 on Arbitrum, and then about 8 or 9 million on the BNB chain, which, you know, coincidentally recently launched on BNB chain, I believe on July 1st or July 2nd, coincided with an announcement of Binance Labs investing in the equity of Pendle. And I want to talk to you about, you know, that deal specifically in a minute. But in terms of the chains that you're looking to expand to, I agree on the Mantle side. I think that's going to be really interesting. Very early days yet, but good to hear that, you know, you're already making plans there. But of the top six chains in terms of TVL as it stands today, there's Mainnet, Tron. We won't include that for obvious reasons. Who knows what's going on over there? Then you've got BNB chain, Arbitrum, Optimism, Polygon. Is the reason you haven't looked at Polygon or you're not on Polygon yet just that the product mix there in terms of LSDs isn't suited to the Pendle product at this stage?
No, it's not that. I think it's mostly a series of considerations. We have taken a look at Polygon. We think at some point in time, we'll have an implementation on Polygon. But of course, like when it comes to priorities, the protocols that we can list and support have generated more publicity on the likes of Optimism and then BNB chain and Arbitrum for sure. So I think it's really just a matter of time.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you can only fight so many battles at once. And how about Base? What do you think about Base? Just your personal view in terms of, you know, what's happened so far, what you think happens next. Obviously, you know, TVL growth impressive, but it's just a weird dynamic. It's very difficult to model for me personally. I'm sure you guys have talked about it ad nauseum internally. How are you thinking about it personally? And then how is Pendle thinking about it?
From my personal perspective, I only started looking at Base more seriously with Friends Tech, and I have personally participated in the trading of the shares. So I think right now, from a hype standpoint, it has definitely come up quite a bit. And our research guys are also paying attention on potential protocols that we can support, but nothing concrete at the moment, mostly because like we still have some other deliverables that we need to focus on and ship.
That makes sense. Certainly interesting, following it carefully. I too have dabbled in Frentech. The most accurate description of it, in my opinion anyway, is that it's more akin to MySpace and no one's really launched the Facebook yet of that, you know, that construct. I think that history will probably show that that's going to be the case, but certainly some interesting stuff going on. All right, look, we've been talking for a while. I'm very cognizant of, conscious of, your time. I know you're working on a lot of things. Let's end on, the Binance Lab deal. They've done a couple of different deals. And how does a deal like that come together, in terms of what you can disclose? I understand that, you can't really, drop your pants on this, for lack of a better phrase. But how does a deal like that come together? Is it, because they are going around and doing a lot of these deals, are they sourcing their own deals? Is it an open door policy there? Talk to us a little bit, to the extent that you can, in terms of the genesis and the formulation of how that came about.
So we've actually had conversations with the Binance Labs team maybe 2 years ago when we started out. But at that point in time, it didn't make sense for them to consider an investment in Pendle, because I didn't think, or maybe they didn't think, we were sufficiently ready for their consideration, because there were so many other protocols that were investable at that point in time. But we kept the conversation going. So I think this year, we actually haven't really, I mean, for me, it's really just keeping the potential investors, or like the potential stakeholders, involved and informed about our progress. And then for a good part of this year, we've also been able to capture good amount of TVL and trading volume. And then we have also attained more organic mentions on social media. So that eventually resulted in the revisiting of conversations with the Binance Labs team. And I think following the listing of Pendle, we engage in conversations as a continuation of the various other conversations that we've had, and really just explored more deeply into the product partnerships that we could potentially explore. So from all angles, we think it is a very synergistic relationship between the two products, and we decided to go for the investments from their side.
And these are equity investments, right? It's not like they're buying tokens. It's an equity position.
It's token purchase.
Okay. How does this benefit Pendle? Talk us through your thinking in terms of, the financial aspect aside. Naturally, it makes sense to be able to get some liquidity on, take some money off the table if that's what you did. I don't know the details of the deal. You don't need to, elaborate on that. But the financial aspect aside, let's talk about, why you think it's synergistic, what the product implications are, where you think the opportunities are that this investment and this partnership kind of smooths out or clears a pathway for.
Yeah, so it's no secret that, like with Pendle Earn, we want to get Pendle Earn integrated to as many exchanges and wallets as we can, with the first integration for Pendle Earn to happen with an exchange in the form of OKX wallet. So I think gradually we think it's definitely very synergistic for us to be aligned with exchanges, not necessarily just Binance, right? But along with the other exchanges that are also potential candidates for Pendle Earn. So I think from a product standpoint, there is a lot that the exchange can offer. And this is something that we're still in discussions of, and we're hoping that we can push this implementation through.
What's your view in terms of the potential impact from a TVL standpoint associated with the strategy of being able to integrate into these centralized exchanges? We're talking, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars of liquidity that sits in aggregate on these exchanges. How does the Pendle Earn product compete with other available options on these exchanges? And then flowing on from that, I'm sure you guys have thought about how to quantify a potential impact over a 6 or 12 month period after something like that goes live. Just for us who are market participants and trying to work out, what the prospects are for the Pendle token and et cetera. To the extent that you can comment, give us a little bit of color on that.
So I think it's a little hard to give very concrete numbers, but we expect moving forward, as this is the kind of product that probably wouldn't make sense if it's just like a single integration. But if we have multiple integration across more venues, then I think the effect of that will actually compound. So with proper marketing campaigns that we intend to launch later this month, I think the TVL contribution in the beginning would probably be by a very conservative estimate, maybe 500K to a million. But with continuous education and continuous building of the integration pipeline, I think we can multiply that. I think it could potentially increase exponentially, especially with the return of a bull market.
Yeah, it's interesting. I like your approach of, you know, I like the fact that you haven't taken the approach of we're a DeFi protocol. We're going to kind of build it and hope that centralized exchange users find their way into DeFi, but actually going to where the users are and not really getting caught up in the, you know, some folks have a very strong philosophical approach to these things. And in my estimation, from a business standpoint, it's detrimental to the prospects of whatever they're working on. You have to go to where the users are. You have to go to where the TVL is. And the fact remains that a very large portion of the market is comfortable transacting on centralized exchanges and uncomfortable transacting in DeFi, and will remain there. So I like the fact that, you know, you've kind of taken that idea and decided to execute a strategy against it. There's gold at the end of that rainbow.
Yeah. And I think we have pretty strong proposition here, because when we look at the fixed rates for certain assets, Pendle's fixed yield are generally higher. Like, for example, ETH fixed yield on most exchanges ranges anywhere between 1.5% to 2%. But on Pendle Earn, it goes as high as 4.5%. So I think that is a very strong value proposition to users. And if we can get this product integrated into an exchange, they can very, very comfortably tell the users that the funds deployed in this particular DeFi protocol and the transaction is transparent and extremely traceable. So as long as users are comfortable, they can know that their assets are safe in a contract.
Two final questions. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to Binance in a sec, but how's the uptake been on the OKX wallet so far?
So I think as of now, we're still relatively slow on the pickup. We also have to incorporate a better tracking tool to just see the flow from the OKX wallet. Mm-hmm. So this is expected to be completed. We expect to complete this tracking in the second half of this month. So we'll have a more concrete idea of the flow from the wallet later this month.
Okay. When did it launch? The last few weeks?
Yeah, well, okay. 2 weeks ago.
Very early days. Very early days. Pivoting back to Binance, so we've got, you know, being able to integrate with their product. Is there anything else that you're working on as it relates to that deal? Anything you're particularly excited about for the next 3 to 6 months? At Pendle, related to Binance or otherwise? Just as we wrap up, I'll kind of just give you the floor to, you know, talk to us a little bit about, you know, the future. Again, what you're excited about, what the team's excited about, maybe any personal commentary you have around, you know, the market as you see it, you know, just kind of a free-for-all discussion, if you like.
Yeah, so I think in terms of the aspects that we're looking forward to, aside from the product features that I've talked about, we're also looking to construct the ecosystems and expand these respective ecosystems. So for now, we have VE Pendle ecosystem, which consists of Equilibria, StakeDAO, and PenPy. Pendle Earn is another ecosystem that we need to expand. Currently, there's only one integration, but it is a priority for us to try to build up as many integrations with third-party wallet providers and also centralized exchanges in the next couple of months. And the other ecosystem that we are constructing is PT adoption. So this one, as with the strategy that I've explained earlier, which involved Dolomite, there are some other participants in this particular segment. And we think for assets like RWA or STETH, where the yield generally fluctuates within a very small range of like maybe like a few percent differences, having the ability to lever up is actually quite important, because otherwise the gains might be too minute, especially if your size is very big. So This is something that we're looking forward to, and we're in talks with a couple of money markets to enable that functionality. So beyond just that, I think there's also a greater emphasis in institutions. So really reaching out and building connections with the institutions that we think highly of and respect, and helping them understand Pendle, and then handholding them to explore how Pendle can be useful for their strategy. So starting with something as basic as providing liquidity and then buying PT just to get the fixed yield exposure, and then gradually expose them to yield trading when they are sufficiently comfortable with the protocol. These are just some of the things that we're doing. And just in the last 2, 3 months of becoming more involved with institutions, we've seen a very positive outcome in both the TVL and trading volume. And of course, the last aspect is actually the cultivation of community. So I think the first half of the year, we've had developed some sort of playbook for Pendle's social media presence on Twitter. Now is a good time for us to take that playbook, adapt it to other venues like Instagram and TikTok, and also look into other geographical regions, for example, Vietnamese communities and Korea, and potentially the Chinese speaking communities. So like in the last 2 weeks, when we started becoming more involved in the Vietnamese community, we also saw more organic mentions in their social media and the Telegram groups. I think there have been more chatters, certainly. And then we're trying to do the same thing with other geographical regions as well.
How do you think about LinkedIn in terms of a channel
Yes.
for B2B? I mean, our business, Revelo Intel, we've got a B2C component where users pay for our research, but we've got a B2B component where we work with projects. It's been an idea that's been floated around internally around LinkedIn. We haven't done it yet, primarily just because I've been slow to really think about it. But have you considered that specifically for the B2B component, and what are your personal views on it?
Yes, I think it's underrated. We've actually, so Ken, who's the head of institutional BD for Pendle, is an avid user of LinkedIn, and he's been able to connect with make very strategic connections on LinkedIn over the last like couple of weeks. Even today, as of this morning, I had a meeting as a result of Ken's involvement on LinkedIn.
I've been hearing the same that if done correctly, specifically for B2B though, and anything out of that is probably not as useful. Are you actively sharing content, and do you have a LinkedIn strategy for Pendle outside of Ken's personal kind of, door knocking?
Not really. So Ken is still our main source of content on LinkedIn. Yeah, but I think maybe further down, we definitely need to consider it more seriously.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think you should, especially because, we've talked about a lot of things here, and there are a lot of things to like about your approach, about the partnerships, about the product itself, that, Twitter or X or whatever we want to call it is great, but I don't think it's the only game in town. And I
For
thought it
sure.
was the only game in town probably 6 months ago. So my personal views changed. All right. Tien, thanks very much for your time. I really appreciate it. I've taken up a lot of it. We did cover a lot. I think there's a lot to talk about and like as it relates to Pendle. I want to congratulate you on your success so far, and also encourage you to keep pushing the boundaries and
Yes.
iterating and evolving. You've got a fantastic product. I use it, and I'm sure people can work out how to contact the Pendle team, Twitter, X, Discord. They're very communicative and put out a ton of good work trying to educate users in terms of what they're doing and how to use it. Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. And yeah, we will continue to work hard.